colorful is the half scene, how tasteful are the sweets, how memorable are the moments, and how flavorful all we eat.
How lively is the goldfish, how wonderful is the air, how majestic are the celebrations, how fantastic that we care.
How tantalizing is the hyacinth, how glorious is the sun, how melodious are the wind chimes, and how joyful is the fun.
How breathtaking is the scenery, how uplifting are the prayers, how happy is the family, and how magnificent that we share.
In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate, hello and welcome to Peer Home with me, Sahar Haqju.
And with me, Farhad Bafuju.
Before we begin, we'd like to offer our congratulations on the auspicious occasion of the birth anniversary of Hazrat Zainab alayhi salam, and it's also Nurse Day, so congratulations to all those nurses out there. Well, today we have a fun-filled program, a very special Eid Nowruz program. We have special guests here with us to help us better understand what some of the people in the West experience, some of the Persians who are celebrating Eid, and some of their experiences in the West in general. We're delighted to have Mrs. Fatima Baharlu here with us and Muhammad Arab. Mrs. Baharlu has a bachelor's in child development, and she's also a preschool teacher. And Mr. Arab is an assistant technology supplier and also an artist. Well, hello, and it's great to have you here in the program.
Thank you. It is, we are delighted to be here. And I want to first of all thank everyone who has participated in these programs to help these programs to come about. And we're so happy to be part of your today's show.
Great. It's an honor.
Thank you for inviting us.
No problem. So obviously all our viewers out, first of all, we want to know a bit about yourselves. You were raised in the West. And just tell us a brief introduction about yourselves and what you went through in the West.
Sure. I lived there since I was 3 years old. And so basically I grew up there and went to school and everything. So the environment was a little bit difficult once you become, you know, in your teenage years to adjust.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Because if you want to have your religious
values
and, you know, that part of your life,
mm-hmm.
also to balance with the American society, to be accepted.
Right.
So it was kind of difficult, but alhamdulillah, with God's help, you know, we passed those tough years.
Good.
And then it just becomes, you know, it became easier as I matured. And I believe, you know, society there matured in the sense that they acquired more knowledge about Islam.
Right, definitely.
In general.
I think it probably got easier and harder at the same time, right?
After September. Yes, it was. At first it was very difficult because people didn't understand, you know, what Islam is and, you know, what was happening to their country under the name of Islam, so-called. And then, you know, once, I guess, through somewhat media and also, you know, the Muslim community, with a little bit of help in, you know, giving them the proper, the correct
knowledge
of Islam,
mm-hmm.
or description of Islam, they became, you know, more understanding, and
right.
so it made it easier on us Muslims who stand out because, you know, we wear hijab or, you know, we represent Islam.
So more immigrants too, as opposed to, I guess, like you said, they have more knowledge, so you don't have to explain yourself everywhere you go. It's nice that some people actually know the reason that you're wearing hijab or why you can't shake hands with, you know.
And they're actually very respectful. You know, I found that even though they may not agree with the fact that, you know, I, as a Muslim woman, you know, wear hijab or I don't shake hands, they may not agree with that or understand it, but they respect it.
Good, good. And how about you, Mr. Arab?
For me, it was very easy because I didn't live in a way that I practiced religion at the beginning. So I didn't have that tough time that my wife went through. I lived just like my friends did in the West, my American friends, and I was 14 years old when I went to America.
Okay, so that's a tough age too. So you were a teenager when you first went.
And you know, my parents, they took us there, stayed for 6 months or so, and they came back and left us with my uncle. And so at the beginning, it was hard, and then we learned that we have to survive. We have to go to school. We have to cope with our situation. So totally stayed away from Islamic culture for a long period of time. And it was later on that I was, through accidentally I was introduced to Islam. Accidentally meaning that it wasn't my intent. I wasn't intended.
Yes, we'll definitely want to get into that a little bit more. So tell us a little bit about how you guys met and I got married. And
oh, that's a long story.
Well, you can kind of condense it for us.
Sure. She met me in the street. She said, "I love you," and I married her. No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't happen that way, does it?
No. That would be nice, though.
At least not in our culture. It doesn't happen that way.
Well, we have a long story as far as like how we met. But we met in a gathering that was held for Imam Hussein alayhi salam during the time of Muharram. And it was in Los Angeles. Over 1,000 people showed up during these 3-4 days. And it was after when I had come to Islam and I had learned about the Ahlul Bayt. And because at the beginning, when I learned about Islam, it took me almost like 20 minutes to become a Muslim. I accepted it. I knew that the what I'm reading is irrational, and I submit myself to it. But it took me almost 5 years or almost 5 years to learn about the Ahlul Bayt. About the imamate versus prophethood, and the rest of the journey it took place about a five-year period. So I met her later on in a gathering that was held for Imam Hussein, and our journey began.
Very nice. Do you have any children?
No.
No.
Not yet.
Hopefully in the near future. I hear if you put a lot of eggs on your hafzin, apparently that's fertility.
Oh, so, maybe that's why.
Depending on how many kids you want, you want to steer away from the eggs or put more.
Yeah, it's interesting. I see a lot of things they put on. I mean, Persians, they put a lot of things on the hafzin. Do you know the
reasons? Well, some of them. I don't know if you know some. I actually wrote them down. I know some of them, but I have a cheat sheet too. But we'll talk more about the hafzin later too, because we have a clip about the hafzin and so what some of them represent. But a little bit. No, I keep kind of I'm curious to know more. I forgot to ask you. Where were you from? Where would you live? Not where were you from, but
here or in?
No, in the States.
We were in California, in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, Santa Monica.
Okay, so you went straight to Los Angeles.
We moved straight there. Although he was,
I lived in Washington, in Virginia, in Virginia suburb first. Of Washington D.C. for 4 or 5 years. I finished part of my studies there, and I started my business in Washington, D.C. And then I migrated to California. I visited two states, state of Florida and state of California, to evaluate these two states for my type of business that I was getting into. I was in home medical supply, home care medical supplies. So I learned that the state of California actually has a better reimbursement, so I moved to California.
Okay, so that's good. Business and worked out well for you, I guess.
Worked out great.
So how many years have you been married?
14. 14 and a half.
Wow, very nice. Okay. Well, hopefully many, many pleasant years to come.
Thank you.
Great. Okay. So how about, we'll steer away from our introduction. We'll talk a little bit about shopping. Have you done any shopping for aid? Are you the kind of people who shop or shopaholics?
Last minute shoppers. We haven't shopped yet.
Okay. Well, all this hustle and bustle outside, the streets are pretty hectic. So, I think maybe last minute shopping, actually everybody's left it for last minute.
Probably.
So, yeah, we'll take a look. We have a clip about shopping and then we'll be back. Welcome back to the program. Well, we're delighted to be here with Mrs. Baharlu and her husband, Mr. Arab. And before the break, we had a brief introduction. And now we want to get into a little bit about spring. So we know that Eid al-Nowruz, our Persian New Year, falls on the beginning of spring. Why do you think that's so? Why do you think it's the beginning of spring?
I don't know exactly. Guessing or I'm assuming it's probably because it's a new beginning. It's
a rebirth.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I think everything's growing, everything's coming back to life. They've been hibernating in the winter, and then suddenly the blossoms. Everything is alive.
You know, some things make more sense. For example, when we went to the West, we realized that Christmas and New Year takes place in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not used to that.
Mm-hmm.
Although it added a little bit of glamour and things to the society, and people were more happy, although it was during winter time.
Mm-hmm.
But spring, as you mentioned, it's a beginning, or it's a, what was the word?
A rebirth
of the nature. It almost appears to me as something to be innate in every human being around the globe, to want to celebrate these moments, a moment that the nature is actually going through that process. And living in the northern hemisphere, we all probably have the same feeling. It doesn't matter if you live in China or Iran or America or Canada.
A special thing, feeling that tingle.
Yeah, it does. And I remember during my youth, my young age, I saw many students leaving school, and they would take off spring break, and they would go to other city, and they would spend time with their family, and it is a special, I guess it's celebrated throughout the world, but a little different than how we celebrate here in Iran.
How did that work for you as a teenager, or even a little bit older or later on in your life? How did that work, the celebrations, I guess the spring break that,
because
celebrated
because I wasn't practicing my religion, Islam, I hadn't learned about Islam. As I said, I migrated to America, and I was there by myself. I lived with one of my uncle who didn't believe in God. He was an atheist, and so I totally stayed away from religion for a long period of time. So during that period, spring break was great. I would go out with my friends, party, things like that. Mm-hmm. It's something that every teenager would do.
Mm-hmm. And then before the program, we talked a little bit about your experiences and what caused you to have that rebirth, so to speak, and that, and you were enlightened.
It was very.
What was that experience like?
It was as if I have witnessed a miracle in my life. It was during a period of time in my life that I wanted to get away from business and my daily activities and spending time with my work. And my accountant told me that if you do travel, if you do spend some time away from work, things would work out better for you. Because you need to get away from work and just come back to it. So I did take that time, and I wanted to go to Brazil Carnival. There was a program, a festival that takes place in Brazil in month of, I believe it's in April. And there are southern hemisphere, so they're actually going through their summer. And then I planned it. I was going to leave home, and my sister came and said, oh, no, no, wait a minute, Brazil is long distance from here, it's far away, so you have to allow me to take this. She took a Quran, I did know it was a Quran, and she said, you have to go underneath of it. So she forced me to do that, and I took the book, and I realized that it has a Farsi translation. And it was at that time that I decided that I want to read this book. My intention was that I'm going to read it, and I'm going to make sure that my sister is going to be enlightened from these superstitious, you know, type of mentality that she has. How can a book protect a person from travel, you know, while traveling? And so I took the book, and in Rio de Janeiro, when I was going to just take a nap a few hours and then go downstairs to party, I read the Quran. And it was at that time that I realized that there is something specific or something special about this book, and I couldn't put it down. I just kept reading the beginning of the Quran like 13, 14 times. After when I read it the first time and I went to sleep, I woke myself up and I re-read those verses, which was the beginning of the Surah Baqarah, you know, where it comes to that point that says, if you have any doubt that this book is not from your Creator, then you shall be able to create a verse like this. And if you can't, then perhaps this could be a rational reasoning why we are presenting to you a miracle. And I was exposed to this great miracle, the Quran. And so things changed from there.
Well, so I guess that was the moment that you truly opened your eyes. And you changed your path in life?
It took me some time to change my path. I remember that I came back to LA. I was into music. I had drum set, guitar, everything, and half of my home was all like, you know, musical instruments. A lot of my friends, they would come to our house and they wanted to just, you know, we would jam and just spend time playing music. I got rid of all that. I get rid of some of the drinks that I held for them. I wouldn't drink, but I would have alcoholic drinks in my home. I got rid of all that. My parents, they came home and they said, oh, what happened? You're redecorating your home. And I said, no, I don't want these things.
Redecorating my life.
I don't want them in my home anymore. And they asked me, why is it that I'm not eating? I told them, look, I'm fasting. I read in the Quran that in the month of Ramadan, you should fast. Since my traveling into Brazil took place in Ramadan, and now I'm back to my home, so I want to, you know, hold 30 days of fasting. So things just keep, you know, revolving my life, and but it took me some time to change my lifestyle. As I said, I remember I would go to a concert. I still would go to a concert and think that it's time to pray. So I would go outside of the concert. I would pray. And as I would re-enter that area, that environment, it kept pounding on my mind that there is a difference between the environment you just created for yourself, praying on the sidewalk or downstairs in a parking lot, and coming back to this environment where everybody's just shouting and it's a
little
contrast.
Bit out of their minds.
In a contradiction in a sense. Mm-hmm. So it took me a little while, but praying helped, mm-hmm. fasting helped to redirect my way toward mm-hmm. Islamic lifestyle.
Wow, it's so fascinating. It's truly beautiful and inspiring. Mm-hmm. Not only, I think, for a lot of people who are already Muslims and already practicing, mm-hmm. But for a lot of people, I think, we were talking about this mm-hmm. before the program, even for a lot of people living in a Muslim country, in a Islamic country, and they do not practice their religion. Unfortunately, to take a second look at the true Quran and the true religion that we have, the beautiful, magnificent things mm-hmm. that we have in our religion, just to take a second glance and take a moment, and I think, you know, if we truly want in our hearts, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will truly guide us and give us a second chance. So let's all pray that we will have that chance to open our eyes and truly be enlightened. Well, that's beautiful. And to all our viewers, last year we had a story, a folklore, Persian story about Nana Sarma and Amu Nowruz, and we had a lot of requests that people wanted to see it again, so here it is.
Uncle Nowruz. Once upon a time, there was a man called Uncle Nowruz. Every year on the first day of spring, he came down from mountains toward city gates while he was wearing a felt hat, a blue belt, and a beautiful, colorful shawl. Out of the city gate, there lived an old woman who was in love with Uncle Nowruz. On the first day of each spring, she got up early. She made her bed, cleaned the house, and took a bath. She dyed her hair and nails with henna and put on a heavy makeup. She put on a pleated skirt. She put some musk and ambergris on her hair and face. She brought a rug and spread it on the porch in front of the pond and water fountain, and in front of her garden, which was full of different kinds of fruit trees and different spring flowers. In a beautiful tray, she put garlic, vinegar, sumac, oleaster, apple, green vegetables, and samanu, a Persian dessert. In another tray, she put 7 trays of refreshments, such as dried fruits and sweets. Then she waited there for Uncle Nowruz. After a short while, the old woman felt drowsy and fell asleep. At this time, Uncle Nowruz arrived. He didn't want to bother the old woman by waking her up, so he picked a stalk of calendula from the garden and put it on her chest and sat down near her. He cut a citron and ate it with a sweet drink. Then he got up and left. The sun rose little by little, and the old woman woke up. At first, she didn't realize what had happened. But when she opened her eyes completely, she saw that everything was changed. So she understood that Uncle Nowruz had come and left. ¶¶ woman became very sad because after so much effort for seeing Uncle Noodles, she had fell asleep exactly at the time when she had to be awake and she couldn't see Uncle Noodles. Every day she talked to different people and asked them what she could do to see Uncle Noodles. One day, a person told her that there was no other choice but to wait until the next year and the first day of spring. Then Uncle Noodles would come down from the mountains toward the city, and she could see him. But nobody knows whether she could see Uncle Noodles the next year or not. Some people say that if they see each other, it would be the end of the world. Therefore, since the world hasn't come to an end yet, the old woman and Uncle Noodles haven't seen each other yet.
Program. We hope you enjoyed our story. And if you've just tuned in, we have a very special guest here with us. We have Mrs. Zaharlu and Mr. Arab, and we were speaking about their experiences in the West. And before the break, Mr. Arab told us a little bit about how he came back to Islam, and he was basically guided back to the Holy Quran and a life of purity. And so the question here lies, I guess, with you, Mrs. Bowerloo. How did that affect your decision when you were choosing to live with Mr. Arab as a spouse, to choose him? Did that have any effect on your decision?
Honestly, it had a big effect because before I actually met him, a friend of my mother's introduced him to us. And how did she introduce him to us? Through pictures.
Oh my God.
So I was shown this picture of a person with long hair and shorts in the Amazons. And I looked at that picture and I said, I don't think we'll be a good match.
At that point, you wore hijab. You were practicing.
I was practicing. And so I wasn't very religious, but I was practicing. Mm-hmm. I was wearing hijab. I was praying. Mm-hmm. But I told my mother's friend that, you know, I don't think so. She said, no, he's not like that. He's changed. He's gone to Hajj. He prays now. You know, his hair is short. And, you know, just she, you know, spoke very highly.
She had a more updated photo.
I think she had too, but I didn't even bother to look at the second one. So she spoke very highly of him. Mm-hmm. But that picture, I just couldn't get it out of my mind. And I thought, you know, it's going to be a difficult life that way. You know, I want an easy life. I want someone who will help me, you know, strengthen my belief. Not, God forbid, you know, like weaken it or, you know, bring some doubt into it. So some time passed after that first introduction, I guess you would say. And then eventually through another friend, family friend, who introduced him, and I didn't know it was the same person.
You didn't know?
No, I didn't know it was the same person. Mm-hmm. And then I finally saw him, and my mother's friend said, that's the same person I was, you know, telling you about. I showed you. I said, no, that's not him. You're wrong. That's not him. And so, you know, through that second introduction. We spoke and we got to know each other better. And, you know, I realized, no, I admire him because I grew up, you know, practicing Islam, whether it was, you know, like weak sometimes or stronger sometimes. But, you know, I grew up in that type of environment. Mm-hmm. Even though I was living in the West, in Los Angeles, I never, you know, experienced Western life. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents, they always had an Islamic Iranian culture for us.
They were growing somewhat up. Sheltered.
Yes, somewhat sheltered. Mm-hmm. So when, you know, I came to know more about his experience, I truly admired him. And even, you know, as years go by, you know, I thank God and I am, you know, very
thankful
and, you know, appreciative of, you know, him being strong and, you know, wanting to continue. Because at first I thought maybe it's just a phase and he'll, you know, pass this and he'll get bored or, you know, he'll get tired of it. It'll be too difficult and he'll want to go back to his lifestyle before, but alhamdulillah, that didn't happen.
Good.
In Farsi, there is an expression. They say they only count the chicks at the end of fall. So she should wait and not to come to a conclusion. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but it truly is inspiring. And like she said, I think for all of us, you truly admire someone who has had the easy life and has, you know, all the things that obviously the nafs, the animal within wants to do and experience, wants to just let go and let loose. But it's one thing to put all that aside and choose to be pious and choose to be submissive to Allah. I think it's truly honorable and admirable.
It is a wonderful experience. You know, without without having this faith, you're going through life without a pure joy that it is your right to experience. Every human being has the right to experience this joy. But unfortunately, when we get tied up with different things and different things occupy our mind, we sort of drift away from something that is innate in us and in every human being. So I think I feel unfortunate for those individuals that have not had this experience. And I wish for them to give themselves some time, perhaps in this spring break, sit down with themselves somewhere where they're not, their mind is not occupied with a lot of things, and think to themselves, you know, these three questions: who am I? Where did I come from? And where do I go from here? And perhaps the fourth question would be like, who wanted me to be here? Who allowed me to exist? This existence is a great gift. Who gave me this great gift? And I haven't done anything to deserve such a great gift of life. So I think spring sort of touches on these things, and it gives us a little bit of extra time to spend with ourselves. And we should take this opportunity and use it for our benefit. And perhaps when we grow, so does our society, so does our world. I don't have any borders in my mind. I don't think that the society in Iran versus Afghanistan or Iraq or other countries or Western countries or Eastern countries are separated from one another. America allowed me to grow spiritually, although all odds was against me there to grow. We had Las Vegas, we had all kinds of clubs in Hollywood.
But we all have one God, right? We all have one God looking over us. So if we're truly looking for it, if we open our eyes, I think we can find it, right?
Yes, and I'm just hoping that everyone takes their time during this, you know, during this holiday, and sort of sit down with themselves and just go through these deep thoughts.
Definitely. Hopefully, that can be a lot of people's New Year's resolution, you know, to change and to open your eyes. Now we'll go for a break, and when we come back, it's time for From Here and There. Thank you. Well, now it's time for From Here and There with my colleague Farhad Bafoju. Let's see what he has for us today. I'm sure some, I don't know, do you have any websites, medical tips, anything aid related, NORIS related?
Right. While I was gathering some collecting articles here, I was also listening to the story, to the very interesting life story of our guests. I wish you the best of luck for this coming new year. And hello again to all you dear viewers. For today, I have gathered three interesting articles, all relating to NORIS. Our first article will be on what Iranians generally do during these celebrations, and the second article will be the views of Islam in relation to Nowruz, and finally we will see very briefly what people in other countries practice during Nowruz. Stay tuned. Well, I have chosen this first article from Press TV. Let me read it for you. It reads that only a few days remains to the end of this current Iranian year. People are busy preparing themselves for the arrival of Nowruz or the Persian New Year. Iranians give their homes a thorough sprinkling in the days that lead up to Nowruz. They even buy themselves at least one new outfit so that they too feel fresh and rejuvenated. Buying seven items, starting with the sound S in Persian, of course, we call it Haftsin, or the seven S's, is also another part of the Nowruz traditions. For Iranians, Nowruz is a celebration of renewal and change, a time to visit relatives and friends and pay respect to senior family members. By the way, it's worth reminding that back in 2010, the United Nations General Assembly recognized March 21st as the International Day of Nowruz. Nowruz is approaching and all of us are looking forward to this happy day, which is full of joy and happiness for all of us. But here, I would like to add some more value to the importance of Nowruz by referring to the Holy Quran. In Surah 29, that is the spider, verse 20, the Almighty God advises man to go to nature and see how he makes the signs of Allah's rebirth in the seasons and nature. The translation of the verse is this, say, travel in the earth and see how he makes the first creation, then Allah Almighty creates the latter creation. Surely Allah has power over all things. Furthermore, in the book Asma'ul Alam, it's written by a celebrated Iranian Islamic thinker and philosopher Allama Majlisi, he has quoted Imam Sadiq alayhi salam in a narration as saying that in the first day of Farvardin, Adam was created. And this day is an auspicious occasion to perform prayers to Almighty Allah for achieving our expectations. There's also a tradition that narrates that during Nowruz, a silver plate of halwa, well, it's a kind of Iranian sweet, a silver plate of halwa was offered to the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. The Prophet asked to which tribe it belongs and what was the occasion. They said, this is a gift from Persia marking Nowruz, the greatest Iranian festival. The Prophet replied, yes, Almighty Allah revived the dead and ordered the clouds to rain. Here, sprinkle of water became a tradition. The Prophet of Islam then ate the halwa and shared it with his companion. Now, at this final part of From Here and There, I would like to add that Nowruz is not only marked by Iranians, but also many people from all across the world, including Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, and Pakistan, and also many, many other countries celebrate the day. For example, but of course with some variations. In Afghanistan, for instance, people design their homes and streets with red flour. In Azerbaijan, people make riddles specially designed for Nowruz. In India, people set on fires for a couple of days and hug each other three times, wishing each other good luck. In China, people attach small pieces of paper. Of course, they must be red in color. They attach them to the windows and doors of their home. The person responsible for this is the oldest woman in the family. And finally, the Japanese put on their kimonos, and they never sweep or clean the front of their homes. They believe by not doing this, they keep all the blessings and bounties in their home. Well, that's it for For now, by the way, for more information, you can log on to our website at sahartv.ir, and also you can send us your comments and suggestions to our email address, which is purehome@irib.ir. You can also have our phone numbers, which I think you can see at the bottom of your television screen. That's 212-216-2854. Thank you. Back to you, Ms. Arjou.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Bafoju. It's very interesting. I found your second article about Adam being born on the first of spring. I did not know that. And I think the sweet pudding you said in the narration is probably, is probably samanu that we put on our half seen. And it's basically it's a sweet wheat pudding made of wheat germ, and it it represents affluence.
Right.
So very interesting. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, we'll go and we'll take a look at a clip together and we'll be back.
چشمه ها و دشت ها خوش به حال دانه ها و سبزه ها خوش به حال غنچه های نیمه باز خوش به حال دختر میخک که میخندد سازد بافتا ای دریغ از ما اگر کامی نگیریم از بها گر نکوبی شیشه غم را به سنگ هفت رنگش می شود هفتاد رنگ گر نکوبی شیشه غم را به سنگ هفت رنگش می شود هفتاد رنگ ای دریغ از تو اگر دریغ از من اگر مستم نسازد آفتاب ای دریغ از ما اگر کامی نگیریم از بها گر نکوبی شیشه غم را به سنگ هفت رنگش می شود هفتاد رنگ. گر نکوبی شیشه غم را بزن، هفت رنگش می شود هفتاد رنگ.
Welcome back. You were telling us, I think a while back, that you were in a cultured family, so a little bit more culture, a little bit more religion. Did you guys celebrate Eid Nowruz?
Yes, we actually did. My mom would have the hafsin. Although, you know, I don't know, I guess then culture there is more prominent than, you know, the Iranian culture. So, you know, I would probably have better memories of Christmas than of our New Year, or you know, the American New Year. But my mom, she still tried her best to keep the Iranian culture.
Yeah, likewise, I think.
Because you know, unfortunately, living there, we were away from family, and when we you know first went there, there was hardly any Iranians. Mm-hmm. So. You wouldn't, not like now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, there's like Los Angeles is called Terangeles. There's so many Iranians. And, you know, they have like Westwood where it's designated on that, on the New Year's Day where they close it and they have, you know, so many programs going on.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually never attended, but I hear that, you know, they have a big Nowruz event there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but as children growing up, when I guess experiencing the New Year, the Nowruz in Iran, it's very different than what I experienced it.
Yeah, you're submerged in it, right?
You can't help but get into the you know,
the excitement and the hustle and the bustle.
Yes, and you know the mood of New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
There, it was kind of like you had to force yourself.
Exactly.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of parents really. Want that. They want to somehow kind of, you know, try to get their children to be excited about it, whether it's through gifts or, you know, through the hafsin and whatnot. And it's hard. It's hard.
It
definitely is. How about you?
When I look at Nowruz, I think about something has to become, something has to renew itself. I believe there is a hadith from Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that says, that in a day that where you have a new perspective or you have a you know new perspective in life, then perhaps that day is your Nowruz, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's a translation of the hadith that I remembered. So yeah,
a new day. That makes sense, right? Nowruz, a new day.
A new day. We could experience Nowruz throughout
the year
as well, but the concept is very simple. We want to sort of align ourselves with our nature, with the nature that we live in. Once a wise man was explaining this, and I learned from this person, he said that we do have four points of origination. The first point of origination, perhaps, is God, the creator, the cause of all being. All creation. The second one would be the nature that we're part of. The other two, one is the country that we were born in, the land that we were born in, and mothers that gave birth to us. These four points of origination we all share. So in Nowruz, we want to sort of being enlightened in that sense that we want to sort of put ourselves with harmony or put ourselves with the harmony of the nature and just go along with it, renew ourselves. So I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, what is my New Year resolution? How do I want to change? What is it in me that I want to change? And perhaps I have a long list of things that I want to change in me, but it's a great chance for all people.
Definitely. A new beginning is definitely, you know, a time to, like we said, reflect and decide. You know, there's probably a lot of things that we want to change about ourselves, but take this day, you know, dedicate this day to making that decision and kind of steering in a new direction.
That's true. So you haven't told us about yourself.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to know? There's a lot to know.
You've also lived outside of Iran for many years.
Yes.
Or you grew up there.
Yes, like you, I was about 4 and a half when I left Iran, so I don't remember very much. I can't even read and write Farsi that well.
Really?
Yeah, join, unfortunately. Yeah, it's not great, but it's the fact. And like you said, I think we share a lot of the experiences that most Muslims who have been raised in the West experience. And so I was pretty young, and I had a religious family though.
I was going to ask, how did you become religious?
Yeah, I did have a very religious family, but my mother was basically, I think, the pillar of our family because she was very, very religious as far as religion goes, not anything else. I mean, my father was very, very special and prominent in our family from other aspects. But my mother passed away when I was 15. She went to Mecca, and she passed away there.
Really?
Yes, she went for Hajj, and she passed away there. And probably, you know, that was a true blessing as far as, you know, for her, it was really nice to have such a something like that happened to her. But for us, it was a pretty difficult point. And I think at that point, we had some of the problems that that you may have experienced, because at that point, I was a teenager, I was 15. And so I had some ups and downs. I steered away from religion for a little bit. And thank God, Allah helped me when I came to Iran. Yeah. I came to Iran about 7 years later. And I came for vacation. And something, I think it's like you said, that spark that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts inside your heart, and then if you're able to turn that into a flame and to maintain that, and I think that's what it was. I got lucky that there was a spark. I went to Mashhad, to Imam Raza's shrine, alayhi salam, and there was a spark, and I just thought, maybe I'll extend my vacation and stay here a little longer. And yeah, just from there, I started making different life choices, and I stayed here, and I got married here a couple of years later. And and Allah blessed us with a little girl, and she's 2 now. Yeah,
so
a little bit, you know. I think we've all had really amazing journeys, and you can see, if you look back to your Creator, you can see that God really wants to, you know, pull us and lure us back to our origins. Yeah. Excuse me, but it just depends if we take that and we use it. That's true.
A few months ago, a month ago, I was in the state, and there I had a chance. I had some time to spend on the computer, and I was just, you know, browsing on YouTube, and I saw so many Americans who have converted to Islam, who have come to this through this journey of recreating themselves, or evaluating things around them. There was a woman who worked in Hollywood for many years. She actually was also involved in Playboy magazine, and she has come to Islam.
Wow.
And for me, I prayed for her. I said, mashallah, she must be a very strong person to be able to pull herself back to the right path, although she has been drift away so far. I mean, it was a joyful moment for me to go through the YouTube and see all these brothers and sisters learning about Islam, or the, you know, brothers and sisters in humanity, and then they were sharing their experience, how they were enlightened, or what triggered in their lives to learn about Islam. So I hope that this spring many people have
similar experiences inshallah. Okay, well, we'll go, and now we'll take a break. We'll look at a beautiful hafsin together. Mashallah, we hope you enjoyed the hafsin. We were just talking about some of the items that we see on the hafsin here, or you saw in the clip there, and what some of them represent. Do you know any of them, Mrs. Farlu?
Unfortunately,
not that many.
I guess just the sabze represents a rebirth.
Right, right.
So a new beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you remember?
Well, there's lots. I mean, I don't know if we have everything here, but we know that some of them are obvious, like the coins we know is wealth and prosperity. Yes. The Holy Quran, of course, there is piety, spirituality. We have the apple. Do you know what the apple is for?
Health.
Health or beauty.
Or beauty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Garlic, I think we were saying garlic, it may not smell so great, but but that's definitely healthy. Yeah, we have some of the other ones. We said, I think the samanu, the sweet pudding, was for affluence. There's the goldfish, you said, was for liveliness, right?
Liveliness or hope. You know, when putting myself in its position, I'm stuck in a enclosed area,
in a small
but I'm
little
hoping
tank.
That one day I will
they'll
reach
let me
it.
Out. I'll jump out.
No, but when I'm looking at the hafsin, you know, I remember in a sociology class they taught me that we studied that there are five pillars for any society to develop. Those five pillars were one was like a government, a common language. Economy or money for transaction, and there was a religion, a common religion that they would practice, and also family. So I think some of these things that we see on
may go back to that.
May have roots to that. Mm. That symbolizes these pillars that must exist in a society for it to cherish.
Definitely. Well, we hope that basically we will take these into consideration. And like you said, the harmony, society, rebirth, all these beautiful terms that we've talked about today. We hope that you all our viewers, you can use them in the new year to come. Think of your new year resolution and have that special rebirth. Don't forget, go on our website and check out our program, sahartv.ir. And do write us emails, purehome@sahartv.ir. Thanks so much to our guests for being here.
Thank you,
dear viewers, for tuning in. Have a wonderful, wonderful Nowruz. Goodbye and God bless.